You are now tuned in to Talks at Midnight, a podcast that dives into haunted histories and chilling murder mysteries. I'm your host, Janet Heredia, and thank you for joining me on today's episode. Welcome back, Night Owls, to another episode of Talks at Midnight. I am your host, Janet Heredia, and tonight we are going to uncover the unsettling case of Alexi Treviso, a story that has shocked the community and raised many troubling questions about how such a tragedy could have taken place in such a small town. Alexi Treviso was born and raised in Artesium, New Mexico, a small community where everyone knows each other. With a population of just over 11,000, it's the kind of place where people leave their doors unlocked and trust their neighbors. It was in this familiar environment that Alexi grew up. By all accounts, she was a typical teenager, a cheerleader at Artesia High School, and involved in various activities, and known to be friendly and outgoing. Her life, to those around her, seemed normal. In early 2023, when Alexi was 19 years old, her life and the lives of many others would change forever. On the night of January 27, 2023, Alexi arrived at the emergency room of Artesia General Hospital, complaining of severe back pain. The staff initially suspected a routine medical issue, but they soon realized something far more serious was happening. Alexi arrives at the hospital with back pain. During regular emergency visits, routinely, you are asked if you are pregnant, and then you get tested for pregnancy. Alexi was asked, to which she denied being pregnant and that she has regular periods. She also informed them that she was currently on her period at the time of arrival. She then agreed to have a pregnancy test taken, and the doctor received confirmation that Alexi was indeed with child, but they hadn't informed Alexi or her mother of the test results. I think this is because it was clear that Alexi didn't want to tell her mother based off of her initial responses when they asked her about pregnancy. In police reports, it states that Alexi asked for the restroom, and she is seen on hospital security footage as she is running towards a bathroom in the common areas of the hospital, holding her backside. Now, having given natural birth before, I can tell you what that feeling means. A sudden urge to have a bowel movement is a sure sign that you are about to push a baby out. Now, I'm going to read to you the events that took place based off of the arrest form, which I have in my hands currently. Now, I have my opinions, but I will share them after. So I'm going to spare you all of the extra like legalities of this arrest form. And I'm just going to get to, you know, the important things. Now, this is what the A form says. I was informed Alexi had gone to the emergency room for lower back pains. Alexi had denied being pregnant and told the nursing staff she had regular periods and did not have sex. Alexi told nursing staff she was currently on her period. Lab work was done and Alexi was found to be pregnant. Alexi went to the bathroom and refused to come out after being inside the restroom for an extended period of time. Alexi did not come out until nursing staff got keys from security to unlock the door. And I guess they went up to the door and were like, Alexi, come out. So they told Alexi that they were coming in. Alexi then opened the door and went back to her room. The nursing staff found the restroom completely covered in blood after Alexi opened the door. Their nursing staff started treatment on Alexi for what they initially thought was Alexi trying to harm herself or having pregnancy-related medical problems. The nursing staff checked the toilet and found it empty. The nursing staff checked the trash can inside the restroom and found nothing on top of the trash can. The nursing staff was unsure if Alexi was experiencing an ectopic pregnancy or a miscarriage or if she was trying to cause a self-induced miscarriage. So, I mean, it's already sickening. you wouldn't even believe what happened next if you have no idea what this case is about. It gets better. It gets better. So in continuation, it says, the nursing staff started treatment on Alexei while a housekeeper was called to clean the large amount of blood inside of the restroom. The housekeeper cleaned up the floor and then went to take the trash bag out of the trash can and found it to be much heavier than usual. The housekeeper said she looked through the trash can and found a tied-up trash can bag underneath other trash. She said the trash can bag was folded under with the tied end underneath itself. The housekeeper said she observed what looked to be a baby through the side of the trash can bag and called the nurses over to check if it was one. Two nurses came to check the bag, and when they opened the trash bag, they found a newborn male that was already cold, blue, with no signs of life and a temperature of 95 degrees. One of the nurses said, after they moved the deceased newborn to the room he was currently in, they had not moved anything and had left him as they found him. The items in the trash can with the newborn were paper towels and bags from the restroom and a tampon. They contacted the ER doctor, who checked the newborn and called the time of death as 0228 hours, which is 2:28 a.m. The doctor spoke with Alexei about the incident, and Alexei told the doctors that the baby wasn't breathing when she gave birth. I mean, they were being nice, because the video that I saw, Alexei said, it wasn't breathing or making noise. I didn't know what to do. That's what she said. So she does not refer to the baby as a baby. She refers to the baby as an it. Anyways, so it says, I later reviewed the officer's body camera video of when the doctor spoke with Alexei about the incident. Alexei said the newborn came out of her and she didn't know what to do with it. Alexei said it was not crying or anything. Alexei said she put it in the bag. She said nothing was crying. She referred to the newborn baby as nothing. And when asked by Rosa about what Alexei did, Alexei said she put it in the bag. Now, the form goes on to say that they then checked the newborn into trauma 2 as they waited for an OMI field agent to arrive from Carlsbad. They observed what appeared to be to this officer as a full-term newborn male with a partial umbilical cord on top of a medical pad on top of a medical bed. Here's the timeline from when Alexei enters the restroom, gives birth, tries to cover it up, does what she does to the newborn, and comes out. And then the newborn is found. And this is all like within a span of an hour, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. So at 1:39, she steps into the restroom. At 1:40, her mother checks on her. 1:49, and this is a.m. At 1:49 a.m., her mother checks on her again. At 1:53 a.m., the ER staff checked on her. At 1:57 a.m., she exited the bathroom. At 2:08, the housekeeper started cleaning the restroom. At 2:26, she finds the newborn in the trash can and alerts the ER staff. And at 2:28, they take the newborn into trauma 2, where the newborn is pronounced dead. The postmortem examination says that excerpts were taken directly from the narrative summary and opinion. Baby John Doe was a newborn baby who died shortly after birth. Autopsy and postmortem computed tomography showed an infant male without any anatomic abnormalities or obvious physical injuries. The lungs were aerated and there was air in the stomach and no changes of decomposition. The connections in the heart that allow proper blood flow in utero were still open, which is not unusual in a newborn. And the adrenal glands showed microscopic hemorrhage, which can be seen in hypoxia, which is a lack of air. The air in the lungs and stomach and no evidence of decomposition is consistent with the baby having been born alive. Based on length, weight, and organ size, he was approximately about 38 weeks gestational age, which is full term, and compatible with life outside of uterus. So based off this information I'm playing devil's advocate here. I feel that the hospital has some sort of guilt in this, and I'm going to explain why. Now, obviously, I went down this rabbit hole and I was watching videos on YouTube. And in one of the videos, I heard the opinions from a few other doctors who have stated that based off initial appearance and noting keywords such as Alexi stating that she is experiencing lower back pain enough to seek medical assistance and presenting with a large belly bump on arrival, they could have very well examined her with their bare hands, like old school medicine, how the doctors do physical examinations and they feel your gut, your abdominal area, they check on your breasts and all that stuff. They could have done that just based off of initial presentation. So, for example, placing a hand over the belly, as doctors usually do during routine physical examinations, which would have immediately raised red flags because, as you know, a pregnancy belly or even a tumor would feel hard to the touch, unlike a belly with, say, fat, which does not feel hard to the touch. Another thing to note, and clearly I'm no doctor, but my logical mind tells me that if I were a doctor and I was in this situation, prior to administering any form of drugs to the patient, I would wait on any testing results first. Regardless of what she said, I would wait for the results first because I feel that there were a bunch of inconsistencies during the events that took place, especially when dealing with a teenager. I mean, I have a teenager and I can tell you that teenagers tend to lie if it means not getting into trouble with their parents, especially when it comes to like pregnancy. A girl that's a cheerleader with a strict mom going to graduate and then probably heading off to college or maybe even already applying to colleges or even having been accepted to a college. I don't know. But, you know, I think that would give her reason to lie to her mom about a pregnancy, but to go 9 months, that's a stretch. So I don't know what she thought was going to come in the end results, but clearly it was chaotic. So the hospital staff and authorities were left in shock by this, and an immediate investigation was launched. Alexi was placed under police custody. Now, as the investigation progressed, more disturbing details emerged. Alexi had managed to keep her pregnancy a secret from almost everyone, including her family and friends. This has led to speculation about her mental state and the pressure she may have been under. However, the law would still hold her accountable for her actions. There are videos that surfaced showing Alexi cheering alongside her team to the school's basketball game, and you can clearly see a belly. And I mean, not like a gut. I'm talking, you cannot deny the fact that this girl was far along into a third pregnancy trimester, no doubt about it. I honestly don't understand how her own mother didn't notice, but then again, what does she know? Because in the video footage at the hospital, when the doctor came to inform them of their findings, you can hear her mother say to her, "Alexi, we talked about this. What did you do?" Which, in my own little brain, I can't help but wonder, was the mother also in the know? One can only wonder. Now, let's get into the baby's autopsy because this will tell us exactly what the cause of death was. Alexi stated that it came out of her and it didn't make any noise and that she didn't know what to do. So the autopsy and toxicology reports for Alexi Treviso's baby reveal several critical details. The autopsy determined that the cause of death was entrapment and classified the manner of death as homicide. This conclusion contradicts Treviso's claim that the baby was stillborn. Toxicology tests show that Treviso had phentermine, a prescription weight loss drug, in her system during her pregnancy. And this drug is definitely not recommended during pregnancy. Either she knew she was pregnant and wanted to induce a miscarriage by taking pills, or she had a form of body dysmorphia and saw herself gaining weight and honestly took the pills for that. So we clearly don't know. We can just speculate. Additionally, morphine was found in the baby's system, which Treviso had been administered shortly before giving birth in the hospital bathroom. However, these substances did not contribute to the newborn's death, according to the autopsy report. Morphine would cause long-term harm on the baby, but it would not have killed the baby like that. Further investigation reveals that the baby had air in his lungs, which indicates that he was born alive. And there was evidence of hemorrhage consistent with hypoxia, which occurs due to the lack of oxygen. So it's safe to say that the baby was suffocated. Now, Treviso was arrested and charged with first-degree murder on May 10th of 2023. Despite the severity of the charges, she was released pending trial and continued on with her life. She even attended prom with her boyfriend, Devin Fierro, whom I also want to add that this is also the baby's father. My biggest surprise here is how this kid stayed with her after all of this. Either the kid truly loves her, or he too didn't want this baby. So it's so sad. This whole situation breaks my heart for the baby. Alexi is also planning to graduate high school, although she was ultimately asked by the school not to participate in the graduation ceremony for obvious reasons. Now, in April 2023, Alexi officially was charged with first-degree murder and child abuse resulting in death. Her case garnered widespread media attention, both because of the nature of the crime and the fact that it took place in such a small, peaceful town. The community of Artesia was shocked, trying to reconcile the Alexi that they knew versus the person who was accused of this heinous act. As of July of 2024, Alexi's legal battle is still ongoing. Her defense team has argued that she was in a state of shock and panic, leading her to make irrational decisions. They have also hinted at the possibility of mental health issues playing a role in her actions. The prosecution, however, is focused on the fact that a newborn child was left to die in a trash can, and they are pursuing the maximum penalties under law, as they should. According to court documents, a trial date of August 26 had been set in that case, but a case information sheet obtained by Inside Edition shows that the trial date and an August 6 pretrial hearing have both been canceled and the case vacated at this time. The decision by prosecutors to not move forward with the case at this time comes after the judge ruled that all comments allegedly made by Treviso in the presence of hospital staff, as well as all of the video footage of her taken inside of the medical facility, could not be admissible during her trial in a pair of court orders filed on May 13th and June 3rd. Here's my thing. We are using the word allegedly as if we're not sure, but there's video footage and you can see the words coming out of her mouth. So we're not alleging anything. What she said is what she said. And I guess they are arguing HIPAA law because your doctor-patient privilege comes into play. But then again, I mean, isn't there some sort of like loophole when it comes to either a fear of suicide or some death? Doesn't that like null and void the HIPAA law when it comes to those two things? You know, somebody please tell me, because in my mind, I feel like there's no HIPAA law violation here when it comes to that, because we're dealing with a death here. So anyway, the prosecutors have since filed an appeal with the New Mexico Supreme Court objecting to the judge's ruling that the footage of Treviso entering and exiting the bathroom where the baby was born is inadmissible, as well as her alleged confession to her doctor that she gave birth to the baby. A deputy district attorney who is representing the state of New Mexico in the case writes in the appeal that HIPAA laws did not apply to the initial conversation Treviso had with her doctor, in which she allegedly confessed to giving birth to the baby. Allegedly, that word. According to the appeal, Alexi's ER doctor said to Treviso, "We discovered a dead baby in the bathroom." Treviso then allegedly said, "I'm sorry, it came out of me. I didn't know what to do." Child, please. The state argues in the appeal that Treviso was not under arrest or restraint when she made that admission, and that the exchange between Treviso and the physician did not rise to the level of police interrogation. Treviso also waived any privileges when she made statements in the presence of her mother and law enforcement, which That is the state's argument. In objecting to the judge's decision to toss out the video of Treviso as she enters and exits the bathroom, both before and after giving birth, the statute or the state argues that video of the hallway was a public place accessible in the hospital to others without any patient-physician privilege. I 100% agree. The Supreme Court has not yet set a date for hearing this appeal, but oral documents are typically heard during the first 2 weeks of the month in January, March, May, July, September, and November. If the Supreme Court sides with the prosecutors, then a new trial date would likely be set in the case. But if the initial order from the judge stands in this case, it is unlikely that the prosecutors would have enough evidence to try Treviso for murder. What can I say? How do you not have... Okay, let's rewind for a second. I got to get my thoughts together here because there's just a lot to unpack. So they're saying that they might not have enough to try Treviso for murder. But then what happens to the lifeless baby? There is still a murder. There's still a baby. That should be picked up by the state anyways. The girl should be doing some form of time. Do I think by going through all of this research and seeing her and just all of the things, do I think that this girl is going to be some crazy serial killer that she needs to be locked away for the rest of her life because, oh my God, she's a danger to society? No, I don't think she is. But I think that these type of crimes need to be punished. Otherwise, you're going to have people that say, oh, I'm going to do it because I'll get away with it. That's not fair for the baby, because here's my thing, and here's the kicker. That hospital is a safe haven hospital. This girl was 19 years old at the time, legally of age. If she was smart, she would have told them or the hospital staff, she could have been like, I need to talk to you privately. Listen, I'm pregnant. I don't want my mom to find out, but I'm about to give birth and I don't want this child. Being a safe haven hospital, by law, they are not to ask any questions, and you literally can give birth, hand them the baby, and walk away and go about your business. And they will not prosecute you, take you to jail. They will not ask you any questions. She could have done that. She did not have to go through all of this, which at the end of the day, if she was trying to hide shit from her mom, clearly not only does her mom know, but so does the whole world. And now she's got tons of hate and media attention that is not good media attention. There are so many ways she could have handled this. Like I said earlier, she could have risked complications to her own self as well. I mean, this whole thing has been, to say the least, the dumbest decision anybody could make. All right. Now, you know, being an adult at 19, she could have chosen to do the safe haven route thing. And that's it. Nobody would have known anything. There could have even been a possibility that her mom wouldn't have even found out. So, you know, stupid decisions cause stupid consequences, and consequences that will linger on for the rest of your life. So, my friends, think things through, think them twice, three times, four times before doing them. Don't be stupid. Or you can be Alexi Treviso and be una traviesa, because that's what stupid people do. Well, folks, as we wrap today's episode, we are left to think about the tragic events surrounding Alexi Treviso. This case serves as a reminder of the consequences that can arise when systems fail to protect the vulnerable, and the details that we've explored today highlight a troubling intersection of youth, responsibility, and the crucial need for proper medical oversight. The death of a newborn under such circumstances is a profound loss that touches on so many aspects of our society, from healthcare protocols to support systems available to young parents. It's a story that compels us to think deeply about how we can improve our responses to such situations and ensure that those in need receive the help and protection that they deserve. Thank you so much for joining me on another complex and emotional story. If you found this episode compelling, please consider subscribing. Your engagement and reflections are vital as we continue to tell these stories. Stay curious, my friends. Stay empathetic. And remember, make good choices. The past is never truly behind us. It echoes in the stories that we tell and the lessons that we learn. Until next time.